Well, you know, a number of our Money Talk listeners have made the observation that they have noticed quantitative tightening is the opposite of quantitative easing. And you know what? They are absolutely correct. You remember the three major quantitative easing programs that were underwritten by the Federal Reserve in order to lower interest rates and stimulate the economy? There were three major QE programs. That's the acronym for quantitative easing. And during those programs, the short rate was already down near zero. That had already been accomplished. So in order to further stimulate the market and help to bring down rates in the intermediate and longer term sector that would affect, for example, the housing market and the mortgage market, the Federal Reserve came up with a new program, a new tool, which is in their toolbox now for future possible use. That was the quantitative easing. And in the QE program, they would go out into the open market and they would purchase treasury notes, bonds, bills, whatever, mainly notes and bonds. And they would also go out into the open market and purchase treasury agency issues. And they did it in big numbers. As a matter of fact, on a cumulative basis, and when you add all of the quantitative easing programs together, all three, we're talking about purchases in the trillions of dollars. And what those purchases did is they created demand in the market for securities, thereby raising the price of existing securities and lowering the yield, which was the whole point. And by lowering the yield, mortgage rates came down. You saw what happened to the housing market. The housing market went from total collapse to recovery, and we're now in a multi-year housing market recovery right now. And it's been very productive for the economy because housing is an important part of the economy. But other rates came down as well. It came, for example, it became easier for corporations to borrow money in the intermediate and long-term bond market because rates were down. Even junk bond rates came down a long, long way. So that was part of the quantitative easing program. And it was a big deal. One of the things that happened during the QE years, we saw the yield curve, that is the slope of the yield curve, increase because there was so much pressure on short-term rates as a result of the zero federal funds policy and as a result of the purchases that were being made that short rates came way down and they were much lower than longer rates. So we had a pretty good size slope on the yield curve. And part of that was because of the QE purchase program by the Federal Reserve. Well, those days are over. We have now switched gears into quantitative tightening, and that is the opposite of quantitative easing. And with quantitative tightening, we have the Federal Reserve taking securities that are situated on their balance sheet. Remember these trillions of dollars that they purchased sitting on the balance sheet and now putting them back into the open market. In other words, making those securities, making those loans available to the open market to absorb. That's quantitative tightening. And it started out at a very low level. It's gradually picking up. But by the time we get to October, which is a few months down the road, quantitative tightening will reach its target of $50 billion per year. That's $150 billion per quarter. That's $600 billion per year. So what this means is, as a result of the quantitative tightening program, starting by, by the time we get to October, the Federal Reserve will be peeling off at an annual rate of $600 billion per year, treasuries and agencies, which will then have to be absorbed by other buyers. in the open market. This is called incremental supply. So we have incremental supply in a significant way coming to the bond market as a result of quantitative tightening. Now, there's something else going on, and this is what makes the current program different than the earlier quantitative easing program. And this is a differentiation that all money talkers want to be sure to know. At the same time, we are experiencing a growing quantitative tightening supply, which will reach its target level by October of $600 billion annual rate. At the same time that that's happening, the Federal Open Market Committee is raising rates relentlessly. They will be coming into their seventh rate hike on June 13th, this week, when most people, including yours truly, expect the Federal Open Market Committee to again raise short-term rates by 25 basis points. That will put the federal funds rate, the shortest rate of all, it's a daily rate, to 1.75% to 2%. And you will see this in certificates of deposit, money market funds, prime rate, all of the rates that revolve around the short-term rate structure that is literally dictated by the Federal Open Market Committee. Well, you see the difference probably already. The difference is we now are on two tracks. Before, we were on single tracks, independent, and that's a big difference. Let's go down these tracks that I'm talking about. The first track we went on after the financial crisis was the lower interest rate track. The Federal Open Market Committee lowered the rate on federal funds, the overnight rate that banks charge one another on loans to one another against their reserve account at the Federal Reserve for all the member banks. That particular rate was lowered all the way basically to zero. At the bottom, the range was 0 to 25 basis points, and it was trading around 1/8. So that was close to zero. And that was the first track that we were on. I'm going to give you six tracks. Six tracks. That's track number one. And then that happened. Rates went down near zero, and that was done. There was no additional rate decline because they did not want to take rates into negative ground. I'm talking about nominal rates. So the second track was also a single track. That was quantitative easing. So the lower rate track was complete when they got down near zero. Then they went to a new single track, which was quantitative easing, and that went on for years. And they amassed trillions of dollars of treasuries and agencies, most of which are parked still on the balance sheet at the Federal Reserve. And they did that as a single-track operation. Wasn't combined with lowering rates. Rates were already down to near zero. That was done. So that was the second track, quantitative easing. And that had a dramatic effect, remember, on bringing intermediate and long rates down because of all of the buying pressure coming from the Fed. All right, so that was complete. The economy recovered nicely, and it's been recovering now for, we're in our ninth year of this recovery. So that was going on, and then the Fed decided, you know what, it's time to reverse course. The economy is growing. It's time to reverse course. So they decided, they came up with a dual track. Think about this. They came up with a dual track. And the dual track was quantitative tightening combined with rising interest rates. And we're talking about four tracks total, not six. Four tracks total. We did one, lower rates. We did two, quantitative easing, both single tracks. Now we came on to tracks three and four together at the same time. Unprecedented policy. Never attempted before. That's where we are now, where the Federal Reserve is on the dual track, tracks three and four, if you will, of quantitative tightening and raising rates. And we don't know how that's going to work out yet. It's an experiment. There are unknown risks and unknown potential consequences. It's an experiment. Nobody, including the Fed chair, Jay Powell, nobody has any idea how this is going to work out. Now, the safety valve that the Federal Reserve has is that they can pull back anytime they want on one or the other. They could pull back on raising rates, which is unlikely, or they could pull back on quantitative tightening, which so far they have not done. So here we are on the dual tracks, first time ever, brand new policy, policy unwind, quantitative easing through quantitative tightening, policy raise rates so we can get rates up, so if we need to take them down in the future for the economy, we can do that. And that is what is fascinating about what is going on right now. And this certainly has been a headwind for the stock market, because the stock market is dealing with the fact that here we have the Federal Reserve relentlessly raising rates. Probably after they raise rates this week on Wednesday, they probably will raise rates again this year. And if the economy continues to grow, conceivably, they could raise rates two more times this year. We certainly think it'll happen once. It could happen twice, depending on the growth rate of the economy. Watch the growth rate of the economy. Now, so far, first quarter growth was 2.2% in real terms, and that's just about exactly where we've been for the past 8 or 9 years, right around 2.2%. However, all indications are the second quarter and the third quarter will be better than the first quarter. Watch the growth rate of the economy. That's what the Federal Reserve is going to watch. And they're going to watch it very closely, because we have a consumer price index report scheduled for this coming week. And when this consumer report, when this consumer price index report comes out this week, the Fed will be watching, because the consensus is that the annual rate of inflation will be 2.8%. on the upcoming year-over-year consumer price index report. The Fed will be watching that very, very closely. They're watching the growth rate of the economy. They're watching the tightening labor market. And this is why you have seen this back and forth action that you've seen since January in the stock market, essentially a trendless and directionless market seesawing back and forth so far since January. Now, the good news is we have not had a trade war. The way you measure a trade war is the number, is the dollar amount of goods subject to new tariffs divided by total world trade. And right now, the dollar amount of new tariffs that have actually been implemented on traded goods is a tiny, tiny fraction of the total world trade. We have not had a trade war in any significant way whatsoever as of today. And that is the reason that the market has not really been losing a lot of sleep over the trade issue, because they have not seen the actual implementation. They've heard the jabber. They've heard the blabber. It's been endless about threats and all the rest. They've heard all of that. It hasn't happened. The actual tariffs that have been placed, including the steel and aluminum tariffs that the United States has implemented against many countries now, including Canada and Mexico and the European Union, those numbers relative to total world trade are just very small. And therefore, at this juncture, here, right today, we can say there has not been a trade war. Therefore, the market has not really responded to the issue of an actual trade war. The market is going to respond in minor ways to threats of a trade war, but the market would respond differently to an actual trade war. Haven't had it. And we don't have any indication right now with any certainty that it's going to happen. That's what's going on out there. You know, you might recall when the market took a steep decline back at the end of January and especially the first week of February, you might recall what was the cause of that decline. And it was concern over interest rates. As a matter of fact, the concern over interest rates was combined with concern over inflation because there was an inflation figure that came out as part of the ongoing data flow that caught the eye of many investors and kind of scared them big time. And we had that very substantial correction at that time. It was because of concern over inflation and interest rates at that time. Well, that's interesting because inflation remains on the radar screen along with interest rates.